I would like to introduce our guest speaker now, Eloise W. from Fort Worth, Texas. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Eloise, and I'm a very grateful alumni.
Hi, Eloise.
It's cold. I want to thank the committee for inviting me. I always feel better. I can thank them better at the end than I can at the beginning. I always say about this time, you know, why am I doing this? You know, I forget why I'm here and what's going on with me. But all of my life, I've always been in a hurry to get through doing whatever I was doing so I could do something else, because it was going to be better. You know, it was going to be better whenever I started this. Looking back, I started this before I started to school. And I started to school when I was 5 years old. Why, I don't know. I guess my mother was tired of me or something. But I started when I was 5 years old, and I knew that things were going to be good when I started to school. I was there a little while, and I noticed that there were older children and larger and higher grades. And then I decided, well, it would be better when I get there. And I got there, and then it was going to be better when I got in high school. I did that in my own personal life. I decided that I didn't like where I was. I didn't like my home, and I wanted to get away. So I decided that if I got married, well, things would be better. And besides that, I lived in a Let's Pretend world. I used to listen to Let's Pretend on the radio. And I used to race home from high school to listen to that program, because it came on about 30 or 40 minutes after I got out of high school. And I would race home and listen to these fairy tales. And I loved them. And besides that, what happened at the end? When Prince Charming came riding in, they got married and lived happily ever after. I believed it, folks. I believed it. So I got married. You know, he went away to service and came home a time or two, and I got pregnant, and we had a little boy, and he was gone for 2 years. He came back, and he had a wife and a little boy, and this was for all the great pills and all that kind of stuff. And he had only worked at a grocery store or something like that, and he had to go back to school. And but we found out something else real fast, that we didn't even like each other, much less love each other. And so, when your life's like that, and you know that it's like that, what do? You know, in my family, You can shoot somebody, or you can go to the nut house, or you can do most anything, but you don't get a divorce. And besides that, I had been told from the very beginning, okay, little girl, you made your bed, now you're going to lie in it. You know, I believed that too. And I was going to have to bear up under whatever was going on with me and not to come running back home. And I didn't. So since I couldn't get a divorce, I had another little boy, you know. And so we continued on that way, and things got worse, and he went to school, and I went to work, and, we just survived. And somebody told me that what was wrong with me is that I needed to go to church and get saved and turn my life over to God. So I went to church and I got saved, and I started telling God what to do. And God didn't do. You know, God did not do, and things got worse. And so in the midst of all of that, we have a little girl. And I don't know why we have babies when things are so bad. So, but I'm grateful for my church. Anyway, I need to tell you how I went to church. The only way I could survive, and the only way that I knew what to do, was you know, I worked hard. And when I got home, when I walked in the door, I lived in a let's pretend world. And my let's pretend world was that we lived in this gorgeous little house with a picket fence. And my husband adored me, and my children were wonderful, and everything was just great. Now, if one of the children came in, and on Saturday, see, that was the only day, Saturday and Sunday's my day off, and so I had to, you know, have my hair fixed and go to the grocery store and iron the clothes and get everything ready, especially for Sunday, because the church I went to, you only went to see what I was wearing and what my kids looked like, you know, and that's the only reason you'd go to that church. And I, you know, I could do okay in that if somebody didn't talk to me. But if one of the children came in and said, "Mommy," I just started screaming. You know, I would just scream because I'd have to come back to reality. And if he came in, you know, it was over. I mean, we really had a bad time. But on Sunday morning, I would get up and jerk the kids out of bed. And this is whenever, you know, the kids had to wear starched shirts and little coats. And my little daughter had to have a dress with 1,000 petticoats and, you know, and all this. And I'd take them in and I'd cram breakfast down them and I'd get them dressed. And my little daughter had long blonde hair and I'm brushing that hair. And she's screaming as she's itching and she's hurting and I'm hitting her in the head with a brush and screaming. And then I take them in and I sit them down on the couch and I say, "Now, by God, sit down and be quiet. We're going to Sunday school." Then I would go get him. Now, we could say the most vile, horrible curse words on Sunday morning that you've ever heard. That was our best time. I mean, I think that we saved up for Sunday morning, you know, for a whole week, because we really didn't talk a lot during the week. But on Sunday morning, we could really get after it. We'd go get in the car, put the kids in the car, and go get in the car, cuss and scream and yell all the way to church. I can see us now as we get out of the car, holding the baby's hand, walking up, you know, to big church, high steeple, go in, you know. I taught Sunday school. That's what's the matter with our kids today. I see these young people coming in and I think, I wonder if I taught you in Sunday school. I sang in the choir. I did all the things that religious people do. And I did not know the difference in being religious and being spiritual. But you see, I wanted things to be different, and I didn't know how to make them different. And so that went on. That went on for 23 years, folks, if you really want to know how long it went on. We were one thing. I finally, when my oldest son went away to college and my youngest son was going to high school, we, at that time, could get what we called a legal separation in Texas, and I got one, which really means nothing. You know, there was nobody else in the picture, and I didn't want, you know, I hated God and man in that order. And if I, you know, I had promised to leave both of them alone if they just didn't bother me. And I went back to school into a different department that I was working in, became a department head in a hospital, and worked. I mean, anything to keep from going home. I still had my daughter at home, and I was, you know, seeing her through school, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I had begun to think a lot about what was going to happen to me when she got out of high school or out of college or whatever she was going to do. But I really threw myself into this work. And this is when I met Jim. Jim was in the same, so chemicals to the hospital, and worked with me closely. And he was very nice. I liked the way he looked. And we talked about business. And he's easy to talk to. You know, and besides that, he's got gorgeous blue eyes. And I like gorgeous blue eyes. But we never really talked anything personal. And I had employees under me, and I was having problems, you know, with employees and all this. And since he's so easy to talk to, I would tell him about these things. Now, he would say things to me like, let go and let God. Well, he really didn't know how I felt about God, but that sounds good, don't you think? You know, that sounds pretty good. And then he would say, well, why don't you pray for God's will in that person's life? Or, you know, he began to feed me the program. You know, he'd tell me I was powerless over that person. You know, and all that. And I like to hear that. You know, I like to hear those words. So I used to, he called on me every 3 weeks. And so I used to say, by the time I get a problem, I'd be so happy, I'd write it down. And I'd put it under my desk, you know, and in my desk. And so when he'd come, we'd talk about these problems. And I looked forward to him coming. And finally, on Christmas Eve of 1967, I believe, I don't remember the date, but anyway, he brought me a very romantic Christmas present, a little crock of cheese, you know, like this. And he said to me as he was leaving my office, you know, I think I've fallen in love with you. And he turned around and walked out of my office and out of the hospital. And I went to see if he really left, and he really left. Three weeks later, he comes back. Hi. Well, I let that go on till about April, you know. And I said to him, Jim, how come you said that? Now, you see, up to that point, the most romantic thing that Jim ever said to me was, let's have coffee in the cafeteria. That's not romance, you know. But he, you know, I asked him why he said that, and he said, I want to tell you something. He said, for the first time in my life, I think that I am in love with you. But I'm an alcoholic, and I go to AA 7 days a week and twice on Sunday. And my divorce is not final, and all I have to offer you is an affair, and my sponsor won't let me have one of those families. I'm not going to get into the rest of that because that's part of Jim's story, and you're going to hear that tonight anyway. I did go see his sponsor and all the things that he talks about, and I did start to Al-Anon. And his sponsor told me to go to Al-Anon, and but Jim had to tell me how to go to Al-Anon. And he said, "You go in there and you tell them your name is Eloise, and that you're going to marry an alcoholic, and don't you tell them another damn thing." So I went in there and I told him my name was Eloise and I was going to marry an alcoholic, and I didn't tell him another damn thing. And we had 5 meetings on why I should not marry the alcoholic. Finally, I went and asked to Jim, "Jim, something's wrong. You know, something's wrong. I'm not getting what I need. I don't understand. You know, they tell me what you tell me." So he said, "Let's go to an open AA meeting." So I said, "Okay." So we went across town, and the very first meeting that we were in, there was an AA gal standing up here. And she was talking about me. She was telling and speaking of feelings and putting words, names, to the feelings that I had been feeling all of my life. You know, she talked about fear. You know, I knew what fear was. But she talked about this feeling of impending doom. God, I'd had that before I was 5 years old. I had that. Then she talked about resentments. Reliving things over and over again that they made her feel physically ill. God, I didn't know that was what really a resentment was. But that's recent. I had lots of those, you know. She spoke of anger, you know, of frustration and things that I had. One of them, and I said, Tim, you have to drink to be an alcoholic. He said, yeah, I think that's one of the requirements. But I started going to another group, you know, and Jim and I got married. Shortly after we were married, I was on the telephone one morning, and I heard Jim, I was in the bedroom, and I heard Jim talking, in the bathroom, and I thought he was calling me. So I went to the door, and I pushed it open, and Jim was on his knees praying. And then he said, God, I feel like a son of a bitch this morning. Well, I don't know about you, but good Southern Baptists don't talk to God that way. And, you know, I thought we were going to be struck by lightning or something. So I backed out, went back to the phone, and I told my friend, do you know what Jim told God? He felt like a son of a bitch. She said, well, I would tell God that. I said, I need it. He came out of the bathroom, you know, and he's tiny. And I'm looking at him. And I say, Jim, how come you told God you felt like a son of a bitch? And he looked at me and he said, they tell me how to tell God everything. Because there's no human power can change that. Only God can. And I heard that. Because I recognized something else. You see, I really and truly believed that if another human being loved me, you know what love is? Love is a good and precious gift from God that sees the very best there is to see in you. And I knew for the first time in my entire life that another human being felt that way about me. But I also knew something else. That everything that had ever been wrong with me since I was 5 years old, I had packed in huge trunks and carried into this new age. But Jim had already told me that AA was his way of life. And if it wasn't, you know, if that's the only thing that had ever worked for him. And he said that we had to set our marriage on the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was ready to do that. But you see, I had all this stuff on the inside of me. And he didn't even know how I felt about God. Because I was just, you know, I was just there. I knew that I had to do something for me. So I decided that I would go to Al-Anon. I loved open AA meetings. I loved open AA meetings much more than I did Al-Anon. Because, you see, the alcoholic was talking about themselves and about what God had done for them and all the... And I could escape into that because I liked that. I liked to hear that. And I didn't have to look at me. And so I decided, though, that I would go to Al-Anon. And we went to a lot of meetings then, and we go to a lot of meetings now. And I would... be everything that Jim wanted me to be, and that I would help him stay sober. Now, I made a mistake. I told him. And I remember that today, what he said. He said, my God, don't be what I want you to be. Be what God wants you to be. I want something different every day. And he said, I want to tell you something else. I don't want you, nor do I need you to keep me sober. That's my program. And because of a loving God, and because of this program, I don't bother my husband's program. And he doesn't bother mine. And for that, I'm grateful. I started to a meeting on Wednesday morning that was 2 hours, Al-Anon meeting. And the first meeting was the step study, and the second meeting was a discussion meeting. And the very first morning that I was there, there was about 30 or 40 women there. This lady came in, and she was totally devastated by the disease of alcoholism. Everything that could be wrong in an alcoholic marriage was wrong in that marriage. I think her husband was in jail, or her kid was in jail. They, you know, just crazy. Just absolutely crazy. And the judge at the court had sent her to Al-Anon that day. And she came in, and she was just absolutely devastated, crying, saying, "I have to do something. Tell me what to do. I've got to do something. Tell me something to do." Nobody said anything. Everybody just sat. And they let her talk. And all of a sudden, I felt this power that this program has. This love, this magic. Love, let's pretend. But that's not pretend, that's real. And that love and understanding was so strong in that room that all of us was touched. And she felt it, and she began to quieten down. And she began to be restored to some thinking and some sane thinking. And then someone sitting next to her said, "You can let go and let God." Now, you see, I've been hearing that for a long time. Almost a year I've been hearing that. And I always thought, let go and let God do what? And she said that. And then I heard it. They said, let go and let God do for you what you can't do for yourself. And all of a sudden, boom. All the things in our preamble at home, and maybe you hear in the meeting, say, take what you can use and store the rest you may need it in the future. And I want to tell you something. It began to open up. It was just like one thing after another. It's one thing after another. And I'd stored a lot because, you see, I don't believe you can come into these meetings as often as I did and sit in these meetings without something happening to you. And you're not even aware of it. And all of a sudden, these things begin to happen. And I begin to understand. You know, when I first came in here, I don't know about you, but this was like a foreign language. You know, I had to listen. We talk about God different. You know, we talk about our lives different than anything I'd ever heard. You know, and I couldn't make it go together. But all of a sudden, the things that they were telling her, they were telling me. And we started a meeting on the first three steps. And I could hear. I could hear different than I'd ever heard before. And, you know, when the first step says that we're powerless over alcohol and that our lives had to become unmanageable. Well, see, I'd heard that. And I didn't know what to do with it because I'm not an alcoholic. But all of a sudden, I heard something. I'm powerless over me. I'm powerless over my actions, over the way I think about things, over the things that happen to me. I'm powerless over me. I'm the one that makes my life unmanageable. Not these people, places, and things out here. I'm the one that does it. And I don't know how to be different. I don't know how to be different. And all of a sudden, you know, it's here. It's the simple instructions of how I can be different. I don't know about you. I don't know where I got so much wisdom and all this, but no matter what, if you hand me simple instructions to something, I go crazy. You know, and I throw them in the trash, and I've got to figure them out myself. You know, I have to do it. And then, you know, when it doesn't work, I dig them all out and look at them again. But I hate simple instructions. You know, I just hate them. I heard, and they talked about sanity. And sanity is sane thinking. Now, I don't know about you, I haven't had sane thinking in a long, long time. Because I was afraid to think anything. And most of the things that I thought about, you know, I knew if I told you, you'd call and have me committed somewhere. And so I needed sane thinking in my life. Now, we went into great detail about the third step. Now, I'm raised on the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That book is written for me. Now, I know in some part of the country, and and if that's what you do, fine. But we study the big book in our group, and because most of us, because I'm the oldest member, and that's what I was raised on. I even got turned into New York. But I'm going to tell you something. You write out the alcoholic and you put Al-Anon and you put alcoholism and you put insanity and read it for yourself, folks, and I'm going to tell you something. It'll talk to you. That book will talk to you. It'll tell you how you are way down gut level. And it's for me. And because I've been here since 1969, and we didn't have all the great literature that we have now. But I'm telling you that the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous was written for me. And I love the 12 and 12 too. And I believe every word it says. I believe every word it says. And I'm here to tell you that it's worked in my life. But, and it said, and for the first time in my life, I was going to follow the simple instructions. And on the third step, it says that we take this with another person. On our knees. I went home, and I was quite upset because, you see, all of this was really coming around in my head. And I called the lady that I called my sponsor at that time, and she came over, and she said, Eloise, tell me what you think about God. So I told her what I thought about God. And she said something that really bad. She said, Eloise, if you know so damn much about God, how come your life's so screwed up? I'm going to tell you something, I heard that too. I heard that. She said, most everything that you've told me is, quote, what man says. It's a man theory. You have not told me what you think. And I realized all of a sudden that it was. I took what man's interpretation from behind here. And I took it as gospel. She pulled my punches. I mean, she pulled me and she said, these are things that you said. She was written down. She said, show me in the Bible where that's written. I couldn't show her that. No. And she said, I'm going to tell you something else. She said, it's not the same soul. That's your religious conviction. And I'm not to save your life. We're talking about your will and your life. How you live today. I also heard that because I thought that's what the third step was talking about. And besides, you see, when I'd been taught at the church that I went to, if you turned your will and life over to God, you had to go to Africa. And I didn't want to go to Africa. We got on our knees, and I turned my will and my life over to God. She left, and she, as she was leaving, she said, I want you to read the chapter of the agnostic. And so she left. Now, for the first time in many years, I began to cry. I remember the time. I remember vividly the time that I said, I will never cry again. I don't know about you. I do know about you. Because I know that tears is a gift from God. And if we turn those tears off, that's a release that God gives us. And we turn it up, we cram it down to where we get sick. And I got sick, folks. And all of a sudden, I could begin to cry. And I have a very close friend, a psychiatrist. I called him. I said, I think I'm losing my mind. I think I'm going crazy. I don't think I'm going to make it. He said, yeah. Because he knew a lot about me, knew about my former life. He said, those are tears that you should have been shedding a long time ago. But you couldn't get to those things. And so I cried, and I couldn't stop. And I went in finally, and I knelt down by the bed. And I said, God, I feel like a son of a bitch. I don't know what that word really means. I just know that it's a word that people say when they're so totally frustrated, so totally defeated that, you know, there's nothing else to say. And that's the way I felt. And so I got up, and I read the chapter to the agnostic, and she told me to call her. So I called her. She said, you missed it. Read it again. So I read it again, and I called her again. And she said, you missed it. Read it again. Started reading again. And she called me back and she said, read very slowly. And I read. And I read. And I was shocked because most everything that I thought about was agnostic. Now, if you had have told me that, I would have said, you're crazy. I'm a good Southern Baptist. You know, I do, you know, that's not true, but it was. Because, you see, I believed God would do for you, but he wouldn't do for me. That's agnostic, folks. That's my favorite thing to do today, to believe that God's going to walk off. You see, I have problems with trusting God, with believing God, with obeying God. I have all of the... See, I used to lump all of those words together. They all have total different meanings. You know, they're separate words. They're not all together. And so I had to learn to separate that. I called her and I said to her, God is either everything or he's nothing. She said, you got it. You got it. Today, even today, it's hard for me to believe that too sometimes, that God is either everything or he's nothing. I learned this in AA. Excuse me. And I love AA. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has done as much for me as Al-Anon. But my recovery's in Al-Anon. And I love AA. I heard this in AA, and I love it. That when you go in to the past, you go by yourself. God doesn't go with you. You go by yourself. That's why we have so much fear. That's why we have so much fear. It's because we go back there. When you go in tomorrow, you go by yourself. Because God's not there. That's why, you know, the fear and the anxiety and the frustration, all of that. You see, God is here. Right this second is where God is. No other place. He's here. He's right here with you and I. He's here. This is where God is. If I stay right here in my day, I can make it through. Sometimes if I get into the next hour, you know, I can go to pieces. But if I stay here, I'm okay. If I stay here doing what God has put in front of me to do this 5 seconds, I can do it. And I can be okay. We used to have a saying that we don't use it very much anymore, and I don't know why, except we would say, what's wrong right now? Well, you know, there was nothing really wrong right now. Everything could be wrong, but I was really okay right this second. And these seconds turned into hours, and the hours turned into day, and months, and now years. You know. And I'm grateful for that. I wrote an inventory and told another human being exactly everything that had ever happened to me in all of my life. You know, I told about my mother and father first, and I was told that's not an inventory about you. And I told about my ex-husband, that's not an inventory, that's about him. But I told about me, another human being. And out of that came that I could be different. Things could be different. I had to make amends, and I want to tell you about my kids. My oldest son, I think, was hurt the worst. He said we had double standards because to the world and to the community and to the hospital and to the church and everything, we were an ideal couple. But our home was a hell, and we lived that way. And he hated it. He is married and has a beautiful little daughter, my first granddaughter, that she and I just love each other and have the grandest time. And she comes and spends a month with us, and she's gorgeous. She really is, and I'm very proud of her, and she brings me lots of joy. He has a lovely wife that she and I love each other and are good friends, and I know those are gifts from God. With him, it took 10 long years in this program for that relationship to heal. We had great expectations of each other. I hate expectations today, but we had these great expectations of each other. And we loved each other, but we didn't like each other. We couldn't stay in the same room together for any length of time and be happy. And I was going to visit a few years back to visit him in his home. And I attend on Tuesday morning an Al-Anon women's group. AA gals come to our group too. And but it's an Al-Anon function. And we really believe that what, you know, we know about this God that we turn our wills and our lives over to. We believe in prayer, and we believe in letting God do for us what we can do for ourselves. And after the meeting, I said, I'm going to visit my son, and I had shared this. And I asked these gals to stand and pray with me, for somebody to pray for me. And you know what they prayed? God, help Eloise to be what you want her to be, not what James wants her to be. And I'm going to tell you something. Ever since that day that I turned my will and my life over to God, every morning I had gotten up and turned my will and my life over to God. I had asked to be restored to sanctity for that day, and for God to do for me that day what I cannot do for myself. And yet, I had never heard that. See, because it took somebody else to pray that. I was not in his home 30 minutes that he came and knelt down beside of me and said, Mama. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm mother, because mother is what grown-up people have, you know. And mother really means mind your own business, you know. Have a place to mind your own business. And so I'm mother, you know. But sometimes I get to be mama, and I love being mama. And he hadn't called me mama in years. And he knelt down and said, Mama, I want that old thing to be healed between us. And I said, I do too. And now we're building a different relationship, and I'm grateful. And I know that that is a direct result of his program. And I'm grateful for that. So if you have a relationship, you know, let's keep trusting God, and he can do for us what we can't do for ourselves. My second son is an executive with Shell Oil Company. I know he has a bad drinking problem. Now, you don't think I want to fix that, do you? But because of this program, And because I trust this program, but most of all because of a loving God, I can let go. And I can stand here. And I can love Him just the way He is. And for that I'm grateful. And for that I'm grateful. My daughter taught me what Al-Anon was all about. She was a beautiful girl. She was 17 or 18 when Jim and I married. She was a senior in high school. And she had a sad romance, and we went through all of that. And she was, she started to college, and she was a very popular little girl in high school. And she got to college, and there was 500 other little girls just as pretty and popular as she was. And my daughter didn't cope. And besides that, she met an old, yucky, long-haired, pot-smoking boy that, quote, liberated her, whatever the hell that means. Now, Charlie and Chrissy didn't get along very good, you know, in this liberation. And she would call and crying, and they'd had a big fight, and she got all this furniture in the divorce. And we would go over there and get all that furniture and stick it in, go put it in a, you know, one of those little warehouses. And by the time we got back home and I got dinner ready, her and Charlie were back together. Now, we did that about 4 or 5 times. And finally, my sponsor said, "You know, Elvis, I didn't know Chrissy was mentally retarded." I said, "She's not." I said, "You treat her that way." Well, I remember I was sitting back that night, and I was crying, and I was carrying on, and I was poor and pitiful, and I was shaving my legs, and I love to use all that foamy stuff that you guys use. You know, I know we're not supposed to shave our legs, but I do, and I'd nicked myself, and here was this blood running up through all this leather and all this. You know. And I said, "God, I'm so tired of that kid. You know, I could die. I am so tired." She's in the living room, sad and pitiful, you know. He said, "If you'll let go, I'll take her." Now, I don't hear God in that voice. But he almost heard that voice. Then I come out of that tub. I put a towel or a robe, I don't know what. I went in there and I said, "I'm going to tell you something. Little girl, I want you to live with Charlie. I want you to live without Charlie. I want you to go to school. I want you to quit school. I want you to do whatever you want to do because I'm setting you free. I want you to give me back my credit cards. I want you to get a job." You know, they say let go with love. I let go. I was sick and tired of that kid, and I just let go. Well, I remember she looked at that. She's got these big old eyes, and, you know, I had to turn around and walk off because I couldn't do it any other way. Well, it wasn't too long after that. Jim gave her back a couple of credit cards and got her an apartment, and they went to work. And it wasn't too long after that till she came over, her and Charlie, and said, Charlie had shaved that yucky beard and cleaned up, and he said, "I know you don't like me, but I really do love Chrissy, and we want to get married." I said, "Charlie, I think you and Chrissy deserve each other." They, out of that marriage, they did. They cleaned up. They went back to school. They got their degree. Charlie went to work. And out of that marriage came two of the most beautiful little girls that you've ever seen. Jim and I, they have brought nothing but joy and pleasure to us. They come to visit us sometimes, and, you know, and we're, you know, you feel somebody looking at you, you know, and you open your eyes, and there they stand. And they jump in the bed with us, and we play, and we have such a good time with them, and they are a real joy. The oldest one has adored her papa from the very beginning. My grandchildren do not know another papa. They only know Jim. And he's their favorite people, and so they, you know, and we have a lot of fun with the grandkids. Now, I wished I could tell you that Charlie and Chrissy lived happily ever after in the little picket fence and the whole thing, but they live in the real world. Chrissy left Charlie on a Sunday, and Charlie went into AA on a Monday. Charlie had 7 years of untreated alcoholism. I'm going to tell you something. Sobering up is not just all we do here. All we do here. Now, I did not know all of that, you know, because she hid it from me. Now, I don't know. If for a while I thought, well, everything's going to be wonderful. You know, everything's going to be great. But I don't know that today. I don't know that today. And I went through a lot of hell. But I let go of it. I had to let go. Sometimes I feel like God just prizes my hands, you know, and my emotions and feelings off of things. But I had to let go. And because she's 30-something years old. You know, that's her life. And God doesn't have grandchildren. He just has children. And so I have to trust God once again with her. I want to tell you about some things that are going on today, how it is today. Sometimes when we're here in this program, and the program has been good to us, especially it's been good to Jim. You know, he loves two other things better than me, and that's God and AA. I don't know if I'm going to get to tell this, but anyway, I guess I got to thinking, you know, I'm such a good Al-Anon. I go to meetings. I go to 3 meetings a week, always. Most of the time 4, but I go always go 3. And I sponsor a lot of people. And I felt like the little lady that talked last night, sometimes that phone rings one more time, I'm going to start screaming, you know, and all that, but I do that because I'm grateful and because I love people and because I feel like that was what God would want me to do and because of this program. And I just wasn't prepared for all of a sudden. I guess I am prepared to come think of it. But the last couple of months has been hell. I buried my mother 4 weeks ago. It's really a traumatic thing. In my immediate family, no one has ever died, and this mother was the first. And it brought back feelings that I didn't even know were there, you know, but grief is a process that we go through, and so we're going to go through that. Other things have come down that test everything I believe about this program today. That test everything. And sometimes I get into fear and about what's happening with us, and I think, is God really everything or is nothing? You know, I am powerless over things that are going on. You know, I found out last week that my father has cancer. You know, I think, what is this? What is this? I don't know if any of you are in the hospital business, but business is bad, folks. Hospital business is bad. You know, you don't need chemicals when you don't have patients. You know. And everything that I've ever, you know, Jim and I run around all over the country, and we talk about how great God is, how wonderful He is. I thought, I don't believe when I started coming in here yesterday, when I started landing in Charlotte, I said, God, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't stand up there. He said, you turned your will and your life over to me today. You know, God is either everything or He's nothing. I got here. I met 2 people. I looked at their face. They loved me and wanted to make me comfortable and wanted me to be happy and wanted me to know that they were glad I was here. And I said, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Yesterday, last night, the whole time, everyone that spoke to me or looked at me, they didn't have to say anything, but I saw love and saying, I'm glad you're here. I wished I was here to tell you that after these many years in this program, that everything's wonderful and you never have to worry again. Everything's going to be great. That's not true, folks. You don't ever get it made. But this too shall pass. Thank you, God. This too shall pass. And what we have today with loving each other and caring about each other, God's going to help us get through this day. And God's going to take care of us. And for that, I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I had, that God gave me the courage to come and stand before you and to tell you what it's really like, what's really happened. The other things are really true in my life, and this is true in my life too. And I wished I could just do all of that great. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love Al-Anon. And I love this program because it has worked in my life so far. And I know it's going to work again. And I thank you. And I'm grateful that I'm here today. Thank you.